This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Most of the women didn't even know what the kind of violence. They just thought it was rape that was violent. So I think in that way, I can see a huge, huge change in Congo.
Eve Ensler, 1 billion rising. What happened this past February 14th, and where are you going with it?
Well, it was just amazing. We got 207 countries to rise, and I think we were pretty close to a billion people. And we just are putting this video together of all these videos around the world, and it is astonishing what happened, from women in Bhutan dancing with butter lamps to the members of parliament taking over the parliament. This year, we're about to launch 1 billion rising for justice, which will be a bigger action. And what we're going to do is we're launching on Thursday. You can go to vday.org. But really what this campaign is going to be is asking and calling on women and all the men who love them to go to the places where they deserve and are entitled to justice, whether it's a courtroom, a police station, a church, a home, a military operation, and to release there your story in whatever form it comes to you anonymously, testimonies, dance, sing, wail, scream, burn effigies, and say the time has come for women to get justice. And then we're going to dance again. And it's so exciting. We have Monique Wilson now, who is leading the campaign, who literally got the entire Philippines to rise. And we have 30 coordinators around the world who are really leading this campaign. And it's going to be amazing.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Eve Ensler, her new book is called In the Body of the World, a Memoir. And Christine Schuler-Describer, Congolese human rights activist, director of the City of Joy. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Armate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Masood, Ravi Karantina, Gazdari, Little Fu, Martinez, DeRosa, Nemo, Alan, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julia Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Matte. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, hosted by Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today, we'll talk about the modern American healthcare system, how it works today, and what it's likely to look like in the near future. And we have some stories to share. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Friends of KBOO, supporting locally produced, organically grown, homemade programming for Portland and the world. Thanks KBOO for 45 years of music, current affairs, and live broadcasts. Friends of KBOO can be reached at 503-788-2533.
Good in the Hood returns to celebrate its 20th year, June 20th through the 30th. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music and food festival featuring a parade, information village, kids space, arts and crafts, and an ethnic marketplace. Saturday, June 29th, Good in the Hood will be at Lillis Albina Park in North Portland with music, and KBOO will broadcast live from the park from 2 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in, turn on, and remember 45 years of KBOO history. This Tuesday, June 25th, from 6 to 7 p.m., it's a special monthly program focusing on KBOO's history to mark our 45th anniversary year.
This month, we focus on the Pacifica radio crisis of 1999, when a grassroots effort across the country, including here at KBOO Radio, came together to save the Pacific Radio Network from an attempted corporate takeover.
That's this Tuesday, June 25th, from 6 to 7 p.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Singled out by NSA surveillance, targeted by an FBI sting, in 2007, Yassim Arif was convicted of one charge of money laundering for witnessing a loan. Now, documents released through the Freedom of Information Act reveal the FBI got it wrong from the start. It was a case of mistaken identity, and the feds knew it before the case went to trial. Join me, Linda Olson-Osterlund, and my guest, attorney Stephen Downs, on a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. It's a case of mistaken identity, right here on KBOO.
Yes.
Wow, I think you
I
have
was
a
away,
tale.
But now I'm back.
Yeah, I think you may have a tale to tell.
Yeah, you know what? You know what happened to me on Friday?
What?
On the evening of the solstice?
What?
I had a son.
No, well, you're...
it wasn't me. Not me personally, no, but I was involved.
Did you get to see the birth and everything?
Oh, yeah.
That's very cool.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah, see, you have probably have good health care.
I do. Yeah, I'm fortunate in that regard.
Well, we're going to be talking about healthcare. This is KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor, and his partner just had a baby, and I'm Joe Uris, and my partner didn't. And the number to call is 231-8187. I mean, she did, but it's been a while.
It's been a while.
It's
been a while for me, too. I have a previous kid, but it had been several years.
Yeah, and so. You have another kid too by your
right. Yeah, that's a whole agglomeration of kids.
So we're you're just having too many family. Kids. We're gonna have to cut that off.
But I want to talk about this experience because I found it illuminating in a number of ways. I'm not the schmaltzy Hallmark card, sappy Facebook new baby post kind of way, but I did a lot of research over the course of the last stage of this pregnancy, and a lot of reflection on just how it's all going to happen. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, I have good health care. That makes me very fortunate. So I'm really wondering about how this whole birthing thing works for people who don't have health care.
Yeah. No, I think that's really important. I think the whole question of health care, particularly health care for healthy people, which is what birthing usually is, and how that's handled in our society, how far we've come from the days when it was almost impossible to get the father into the delivery room. I mean, things have changed for the better in terms of the services, if you can afford them.
My son is a teenager. My partner's daughter, also a teenager. They were both there in the delivery room. They were both cheering on my partner at the end, and they were both right there for the big moment. It was fantastic.
Wow.
It was great. I got to say that if you're fortunate enough to have health care, the for-profit healthcare system delivers very good care. I have no complaints. Everything was very well done. It was a traditional hospital delivery. We talked about some alternatives, and we decided to go the hospital route because that's what she was familiar with and comfortable with.
Well,
and
she's a little older than the younger people.
She is, yeah.
So you have stats to worry you.
Yeah, indeed. There were enough unpredictables that it was probably a good idea to go that route.
Uh-huh.
But everything went brilliantly. Our OBGYN was an incredibly competent person, one of these people who just owns the room. She was amazing. She was the boss. She was fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, everything went brilliantly. Like I said, I'm one of the fortunate ones. I was able to have all this care provided because I have a job that has good benefits.
Yeah.
And therein lies the problem.
Well, yeah, our experience, my partner and I, was not so wonderful as yours.
Mm-hmm.
For our first child, I was an impoverished student. My partner was not working then because she was in her third trimester of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It was not so good. The second time, oh, it was at Kaiser. Now, this is years ago, and it's not a criticism of Kaiser. But I was allowed in the delivery room. The doctor was someone we didn't know, the OBGYN, mm-hmm. who was a South African male. Mm-hmm. And he kept, every time I was doing effleurage, that is right. kind of gently stroking my partner. Mm-hmm. Every time
usually people do that in private.
All right, go ahead. Don't go there. Anyway, while I was doing that, which was part of the thing we learned, he would, as soon as I do that, he'd throw another sterile sheet on her. So she was getting loaded up with sheets. Essentially, my situation in there was not only superfluous, but resented. The delivery was easy. I shouldn't even say that. It was easy for me. It was probably fairly easy for my partner, judging by the fact that she used no anesthetics or anything. But as soon as the baby was born, I had to pay very close attention because they weren't paying as much attention as they should have to the newborn. She was a beautiful child, but it was like suddenly having Krishna born because she was a little blue, which is a circulatory issue.
Right.
I called attention to it immediately. They immediately did the right things. And then they wouldn't let us, they really put pressure on to not have the baby room in with my partner. And I found, we were frightened. We were subject to whatever, fear you have.
Right. You were young and inexperienced.
Yeah, that. And the thing is that in the course of that, they gave the baby prophylactic antibiotics, which in turn kicked in, as far as we can tell, a lifelong problem with dairy products and other things. So they ended up giving us soy milk formula when breastfeeding was no longer possible. So it was disappointing and annoying and less beautiful and less unnecessarily less what it could have been. And
sure.
This was in a prepaid system. Mm-hmm. But it's just it was just a very it was very conventional for that time. Now this is 40-odd years ago.
40-odd years ago.
Yeah.
Well, if my experience is anything to judge from, some progress has been made.
I think so.
First of all, my presence was assumed. It was understood from the get-go that I was going to be in there. And our doctor said, my rule is mother, father, or partner, plus two more people. Any more people than that gets a little too crowded.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of moving around and a lot of moving parts, so to speak.
Yeah, as it were.
So, we picked, for our extra two, our two kids, and they were there, and I'm supremely glad they were there at that pristine moment.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was fantastic. What I have a problem with is, as I mentioned, we have this insurance, we have this care because it's coupled with our jobs. And that's been the traditional American healthcare model. You only have health coverage, you only have care if it's provided through your employer. That means if you don't work, you're out of luck.
Poorly paid jobs.
You're right. Yeah, or if you're working and you don't have benefits, you're out of luck. Obamacare has begun to change that equation. But we're not nearly where we need to be yet.
Right.
So like I said, I'm lucky. I was fortunate enough to have a fantastic experience. I was fortunate enough to have a very high level of very competent care provided to me. I mean, we had the nursing support afterwards was brilliant. We had a woman come in and talk about the breastfeeding, and my partner had breastfed before, but it was really nice to have a refresher course. We learned a few things we didn't know. It was great. It was a great experience. So the other aspect of this is, as we were planning, as this pregnancy progressed, what are we going to do in the weeks and months following the birth? Ideally, back in this long gone and much ballyhooed golden age of America, it was assumed that one partner would stay home and the other would work. And if there are any children who came into the mix, there was always somebody at home, usually the woman. Well, those days are long gone. Most people these days have to cobble together some sort of plan so that somebody can be on hand if there's breastfeeding going on, and hopefully there is. That's the woman who's going to be able to stay with the kid for those first few weeks and months. So my partner is a member of a union, and our original plan was to take advantage of something the union had in place called a parental leave bank. And this was a wonderful thing. This is where union members donated unused sick time, unused vacation time into a pool that new parents could
That's great.
Draw from. Yeah. So that at least some of that time that they were away, they could continue to receive pay. Mm-hmm. It was a great thing. We found out this past spring that that program was sunsetting as a result of the latest round of negotiations, the new contract being established between the union and my partner's employer.
So this is part of the rollback of bennies for working people.
Yes, a small slice of that much larger picture, a rollback of the bennies and the perks for working people. So all of a sudden we had to come up with a new plan. And we had, like I'm pretty sure most people do, had to cobble together bits and pieces of vacation time and sick time. Fortunately, my partner supervisor is a really cool, pretty enlightened guy and was able to set up a situation where she can telecommute after a few weeks, do some work from home. And we're going to make it. We're going to figure it out. That's what people – you figure it out somehow. You have a kid, you make it work. But I got to looking into this a little bit.
What did you discover?
The United States is one of only four countries – that do not mandate paid parental leave.
Wait,
for
a minute,
new
there's
parents.
Only four countries?
Only four countries in the world.
But other countries are poorer.
Other countries are much poorer, but somehow they see fit to make this most basic investment in the most fundamental unit of their society, the family.
Huh.
It makes me question our priorities. And we'll talk a little bit about that, more about that in a second. What are the four countries? Well, there's the United States alone among the major advanced industrial nations not to offer paid parental leave. The other countries, Liberia, Papua New Guinea, and Swaziland, which is a little landlocked tribal homeland completely surrounded by South Africa. That's the company we keep. Nothing against these countries. I'm sure they're perfectly nice places.
Well, I'm not so sure they're perfectly nice places.
Well,
but okay.
By extension, one might say that the United States isn't a perfectly nice place because they're not willing to make this investment. This is astounding to me because if you think about it in terms of a long-term trade-off, what does it mean for a country if they make this initial upfront investment? It seems to me that it really pays off over the long term. All of these countries have much lower incarceration rates than the United States, much lower rates of violent crime. They're better educated. They have lower rates of infant mortality and maternal mortality. And generally, their governments are not involved in costly foreign wars of choice.
Well, that's because we're rich and powerful.
I mean, I'm not saying this all stems from our parental leave policy, but it's symptomatic of a much larger problem.
Of the values
of
society.
Yes, these countries have chosen to make this most basic investment in the stability of their society. And here in the United States, our first and foremost overwhelming obligation is to our paymasters. The question here is not what is best for your family, for your new child. It is how can you more quickly get back to work and up to speed and better back to serving your paymasters again.
Well, I think this is really important. I want to hear from folks, particularly I'm interested in women because after all, they are the birth people. 231-8187.
Yes. And before we do that, I just want to give you a quick sampling of what's out there in some of these other countries. I mean, it's astounding. New parents in Austria, men and women, get 16 weeks off at 100.
Wait, 16 weeks?
16 weeks at 100% pay.
Wow.
Croatia, mothers get 4 weeks off before birth and 26 weeks off after birth at 100% pay.
I find that amazing.
In Norway, you get a year if you're a mother.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a father, you must take 12 weeks off at 100% pay to hang out with your new kid, which means at some point in Norway, there is a conversation with something like this. I'm ready to go back to work. No, I'm sorry, Mr. New Norwegian Dad. You've got to go back home for a few more weeks and hang out with your new kid. That is a fundamental difference in values.
Wow.
And this is true all over the world. Mexico offers 12 weeks of paid leave, not at 100% pay, but hey, anything helps, right?
Yeah.
But we don't do it.
Well, we have family values instead.
Yeah, that's a very good point. All right, conservatives, family values conservatives, where are you on this issue? Why aren't you out clamoring for paid parental leave? Could there be a more basic expression of family values than paid parental leave?
Well, and the whole concept, which we now know from psychology, of bonding, true of all sentient species,
yes,
cannot take place as effectively if you ain't there.
Yes, especially among primates like ourselves. Most of our behavior is learned behavior.
Yes.
There are a few instincts that guide us, but most of how we act is governed by what we learn and how we learn to act. So if those first weeks are suffused with stress, with unease, with worry about how parents are going to keep money flowing in to keep the family going, what does that have to do with that bonding process, with long-term mental health, with long-term stability of the family? I'd say there's a pretty strong connection there. And this is anecdotal. This is me talking on the radio. But it seems like a no-brainer to me.
Well, and there actually are studies that show that the whole bonding experience is really good for the child as well as for the parents, and that it's very important. And in America, it's very much interrupted by the realities of economic demand.
In Denmark, both parents get 52 weeks of paid leave at 100% pay. 18 weeks of that has to be taken by the mother. 2 weeks has to be taken by the father. The rest they can divide as they see fit.
Wow.
Now, I would guess that there are conservatives out there who hear this argument and they say, that's an unwarranted intrusion on our freedom by government. Government doesn't need to step in and tell me how to raise my kid. I say to you, a policy that gives a couple 52 weeks of leave to divide between themselves, that is freedom. That it endows freedom upon your citizens. It gives them more latitude to be good parents, to help contribute to a peaceful and stable society. That is government granting freedom.
Now, do you see a connection between our high incarceration rates, our high autism rates, and a whole bunch of other problems, and the policy of not allowing adequate bonding to take place between mother and father and child?
I think it's a factor. It's certainly not a sole explanation. Those are very complex phenomena, very
yes.
complex problems. But I would guess that if we were to see a more enlightened policy put into place in this country, that we would probably see some of those statistics improve.
See, I think if conservatives were really conservative, even libertarians really libertarian, they would favor strengthening the family because that's their family values trip, and they would insist on these kinds of things. But
you
they
would
don't.
Think so. You would think so.
They don't. They don't at all. And in fact, you know, oddly enough, they're against contraception and, of course, abortion. Many of them against contraception. And yet, I don't even need to finish that sentence. Everyone out there knows what I'm saying. We do want to hear from people. Were there some other stuff you wanted to cover before we go to that?
These statistics just stun me over and over again. So I'll continue to toss them out here and there as we go.
Okay.
But let's go to the phones.
All right. 231-8187.
Marie,
you're on the air.
Good morning, Abe and Joe.
Good
you
morning.
Guys are the best.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I want to say this topic, the way you all are covering it, I was going to say A++, but I'm changing it to summa cum laude. You all are wonderful dads.
Thanks.
I'm very impressed. And I'm so thrilled at your interaction with the birth experience. I'm just totally impressed.
Oh, it's fantastic. I may sound like a half-asleep zombie, which I am, but I'm really, this has been one of the happiest stretches of my life. Go ahead.
You guys are great dads. And the engineer cautioned me about a three-minute time limit. And so maybe one of you guys could look at your watch when it's 2 minutes and 30 seconds, say yellow, and I'll know that I'm in Toastmaster, so know that that's the time to wrap it up. But quickly, I totally agree with everything you said. The bonding, the time with the little baby in the beginning is so important for bonding, for the mother and the dad. What you all said on breastfeeding, hallelujah, amen. And a few things to comment if people are looking for breastfeeding help. La Leche League.
Yes, that's important.
La Leche League?
La Leche League.
Yes. It literally means like the milk.
The milk.
The milk.
Yep.
Yeah, that's huge. And so just to tell you a bit of my experience, I have, thank God, four beautiful children, and they were all natural births. And the second one, I wanted to be in the birthing room of the hospital, and I had all the prep going. I did all the pre-classes. Then at the very last minute, they said, well, we're too booked up, and you can't have the birthing room. So, but it was a beautiful birth, but I did not get a birthing room. But the nurse gave the baby, now this is 25 years ago, a sugar bottle. That's what they did. And some hospitals don't allow sugar water anymore, but that's what they did, which is contrary to what he wanted. So my last two births, guess what? They were home births. I was living within 1 mile of a hospital, so it was very safe. Mm-hmm. And I had two midwives. I had my midwife, who is also an RN, and her student midwife with her. So I had two nurses totally attending to me. It was out of this world. And I actually thought you all were going to do other medical things, other medical whistleblowing, so I can do that another time. But I have a medical background, actually, and it was a wonderful experience. And I just want to go back and re-congratulate you guys. How am I doing on my time?
You're just about out of it.
But okay, there's the bell.
Thank you, guys.
All right, thank you very much for the call. You know, I don't come to this without a certain degree of knowledge. I was fortunate enough to have fellowships from the National Institutes of Health and from the Kaiser Research Foundation in my younger years when I was in graduate school. And I went to Europe and compared the healthcare delivery systems of Yugoslavia, then Yugoslavia, Holland, and Denmark. And in Holland, I'll use just Holland as an example. Denmark is also very, very good. Yugoslavia was good, but impoverished relative to the other two. Mm. But in at that time in Holland, births were mostly at home. There was a crash vehicle, an ambulance-type vehicle, with everything you might need in an emergency. And the doctor, it was mostly doctor, and an assistant assisted in the birthing process in the home.
Wow.
And before the birth, they went around the house and made sure it was not too funky. And, you know, it was really an amazing system. And their success rates in birthing, the postpartum outcomes, the health for both mother and child were really, really very high. Hmm. So I got some sense of what could be done in a modern industrial or post-industrial society.
Yeah, it's not a real complicated formula.
Wow.
Yeah, no. It just takes the collective will to make that investment.
And, of course, it was cheaper. The reason why they pushed it as part of a healthcare system was because it was much cheaper than occupying a room in a hospital for 3 or 4 days.
Sure. Yeah, and it's really not, in most cases, not necessary to be in a hospital for 3 or 4 days.
No, and in fact, you don't have accidents like some nurse concerned that a baby is crying, and therefore you give it sugar water, which then reduces its suck reflex and therefore makes the process of getting milk to the baby from the breast much harder.
Let's go back to the phones.
All right.
Who do we have next? Laura, good morning.
Hi there. Congratulations on your new child.
Hey, thanks very much.
Well, you're welcome. I just, I'm not sure if you meant to say only four other industrialized nations.
No, only three other nations, period.
Okay, well, what about like Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan and Congo and
They all mandate a period of paid parental leave.
Now, we should point out, and this is what you're, I think, raising, in many of those societies, so many people are unemployed that it might have less meaning, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Women
just
don't work.
Yeah, well, right.
Right. And,
women aren't allowed to work.
Right. So it is different in that respect.
And the whole circumstances of birth are probably much, much different.
Yeah.
Technology and setting and so on.
Right. And we do know that in some of those societies, Afghanistan is one I know about, the infant mortality rate is incredibly high.
Right. So I guess the disclaimer should have been said.
Well, yeah, but
well,
you know,
some countries we're not included in this because.
Well, we include them, but
so
it's a statistical fact rather than a reality based situation.
Reality fact. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. Yeah,
well, thanks very much.
Thanks for the call. 231-8187.
Who's next, Steve? Randy. Good morning. Hello.
I'm a family values conservative, and I'm to reply that no, government does not give freedom. We have freedom, and government can only take it away.
Oh, I think that is just manifestly wrong. Why don't you explain yourself?
How does government give freedom? How does that work?
Here's how it works. Let's take the Danish example, where couples are given a year's worth of leave that they can divvy up mostly as they see fit. That provides a couple with an enormous freedom from the stress associated with having to rush back to the workplace. They're able to be better parents. They're able to raise the child in a more calm surrounding. They're able to be, in almost every respect, a healthier family unit.
And I want to add that the statistics in terms of infant morbidities and mortalities and mother morbidities and mortalities in Scandinavia reflect the policies that we're talking about. It's not an abstraction or a gift from the government in the sense that you're maybe trying to suggest. The people fought and fought hard to get these rights, and the government acceded to the demands of the people, not the government just benignly gave them.
Let me put it to you this way. The fact that we don't have parental leave legislation makes us less free than those parents in other countries that have it.
Okay, but let me ask you this question.
Sure.
Where does the financing come for all this freedom? Does it come from the government, or does it come from...
As you must know, and as I think you're making the point of, the taxation rates reflect these advantages. It's a decision of the people. By the way, these are democracy we're talking about in Denmark. It reflects a decision of the people to tax themselves to provide these services for the people.
To answer, I did a little research on that front as well. It really varies by country. Most places, the cost is split. The proportion differs, but the cost is split between the employer and the government.
The government doesn't pay a thing. Government has no money. It only takes from the people.
See, you're talking some kind of philosophical notion about the nature of government. Government's not an abstraction. It's a series of real things, and it gains its money, indeed, from a tax structure. And the design of that tax structure is very different in many countries than it is in the U.S. So
the government doesn't give freedom. The people...
No, you're being all philosophical. It's not philosophical. It's practical. It's these services rendered because the people demand them. That's the role of the government in the matter. It's not a philosophy. It's not a magical thing. It's not government as an abstraction. It's a government that services the people's needs because the people have power and they vote a government in or out.
I agree, but this is not an abstraction, what I'm saying. It's concrete as can be that the people pay the money to support the Family Leave Act.
And in return, they get a situation that's far superior than the one that's offered to Americans.
Okay, we're gonna give some other folks an opportunity.
Thanks for the call. You know, I'm glad he asked those questions because that leads me to another important part of this discussion. Are there private entities in the United States that offer paid parental leave? The answer is yes. Very, very few of them do, but they are out there. The best example I discovered was Google.
Google.
Google actually treats its employees very, very well. Recently, Google doubled the time of its paid parental leave from 5 weeks to 10.
Really?
Yeah, here's why. They found out that even after offering 5 weeks of paid parental leave to new mothers, they were still losing a large number of mothers to attrition. Mothers were deciding to not go back to work for whatever reason after the 5 weeks was up. And Google was ending up having to lay out the money to recruit, hire, and train replacements for these women who are
in highly technical jobs.
So they looked at this problem and said, what do we do? The basic and I think sort of reflexive bottom line response would be to get rid of the paid parental leave. They'd say, oh, it's not working. But they didn't do that. They doubled the period from 5 weeks to 10, and they saw their attrition rate drop by more than half. So they found out that not only were they keeping more of these highly trained professionals on the job, but they were saving a boatload of money from not having to find, hire, and train replacements. So it actually makes good capitalist sense to offer paid leave to your employees.
That's really an important point. I think a lot of people really in this society don't see the potential for a reformed approach to the development of private enterprise, and we have a most reactionary system.
We do. Let's go back to the phones. Robbie, good morning.
Hey there.
Hey.
It's perfectly, you've segued exactly into what I was going to talk about, which is co-ops.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Democratically run workplaces can very easily create policies that make sense.
In fact, you know, Scandinavia has a lot of co-ops.
Yeah, and well, it's funny that you brought up Google. I think that that shows that there's a certain part of the world where privilege equals freedom, but that if we simply work for ourselves and for the people that we have relationships with in our community, then we may not have exactly the capital and the fancy lunchrooms and whatever that Google has, but we will have control over our own lives.
Right. Hey, control over your own lives. That's what I think I was. I'm glad you put it that way. That's what I was getting at when I said that these government policies make people more free.
Well, it's funny that people talk about freedom all day long. They talk about it, but then they spend more time than they spend sleeping or with their children in a complete dictatorship.
It's
well, I don't know about complete dictatorship. I'd say partial dictatorship, but I think your point is valid. I also think it's really important to understand something about our economics and the way we think about economics in this country. We tend to think about supply side rather than demand side. The fact of the matter is that if people get good wages and good working conditions and good bennies, they have more time for leisure and they have more time to spend their income, which in turn creates a better economy. The current policy of ignoring demand is just devastating to the economy, and we're seeing the effects of it in all over the world right now, all over the industrial world. Anyway, thank you for your point. I think co-ops are an excellent approach. They bridge the difference between a demand socialist system and something more akin to entrepreneurial capitalism.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah, I've got to get back to work. Have a great day.
Yeah, take
thank
care.
Thank you very much for the call. Engineer Steve makes the very pertinent point that minimum wage workers are expendable, so the Google model does not apply to a significant portion of us. He's absolutely correct. And the root of that particular problem is the thing I mentioned earlier, that healthcare in our society is coupled with work. If you don't have a job with benefits, you're out of luck. Now, I mentioned that Obamacare is beginning to tip these scales back the other way, but we've still got a very, very long way to go. The reason that we push so hard on this show, and many Americans push for as well, universal healthcare, is we want to separate healthcare from employment. Healthcare is something that everybody deserves because they are a human being on the face of the planet Earth, not because they happen to have a good job with good benefits. When you cross that particular divide, and the statistics bear this out time and time again, you have a more healthy, more happy society. No, it's just the truth.
No, I think it's really important. In America have tended to swallow a certain kind of entrepreneurial approach to everything. And the notion that it's a fair system where everybody has equal chances and equal rights is embedded in our belief system. And yet we know that we have a class structure. We know that opportunity varies based on income.
Yeah.
And we know these things, but we can put them aside when we talk theoretically.
Let's go back to the phones. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. How are you, sir?
Oh, good. You know, I think you guys have made every point, in the last three calls that I wanted to make. And
oh, well, then.
And it's great. So I'm going to say something and then shut up.
Good idea, man. Go for it.
Hey, listen, I don't need to be told. So, I want to say something that I think as people who are thinking people in society, in American society, and I think we need to tell all the non-thinking people that, hey, you know, we are turning into and we have become a backwards society. We are not progressive anymore. And we do not have a good healthcare system. I think just a year and a half, 2 years ago, I heard some senator, I didn't even hear his name, but he stood up and he said, this is the best healthcare system in the world. Well, it's not.
It's the most expensive.
I mean, it's ranked, 37th or something?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know the number, but it's pretty far down there.
Right. And this free market social, anti-socialist system that we have in place up in our government is not working. And, we are going down the path of going down the drain. I don't know how.
I like that image, going down the path of going down the drain.
Exactly. There you go. I'm using Republican speak. But, when a Democratic president that we've elected, supposedly liberal and all that, is instituting policies against, against citizenry, using tax money to do so, so you think we have any chance at all of attaining any birth, maternity rights that Europe has?
I doubt it.
Not
anytime soon.
I think it's possible, though.
My point is, instead of saying, oh, well, this is what we're all working toward as a progressive society, we need to say, this is what is being kept away from us.
Okay, yeah, I want to thank you for the call.
Yeah, and you have a great day.
Yeah, you too. 231-8187. I want to hear from some more women. You know, guess what, guys? Women bear children, and I really want to hear from women and their experiences.
I'm glad you brought that up, because as we were wrestling with how we are going to handle this post-birth period, I was talking to a lot of colleagues and friends, particularly women, like, well, you know, what did you do? And I heard from a lot of people that everybody felt this pressure. There was only one person that I talked to who had the luxury of not having to go back to work.
Really?
They could stay at home indefinitely. Everybody else says at some point they felt this squeeze, usually sooner rather than later. And in a couple of instances, women told me that the pressure to go back to work led them to have to stop breastfeeding sooner than they would have liked or sooner than is healthy. So we're talking about a set of policies, or rather a lack of policy, that is actually endangering the health of newborn kids.
Now, some employers do have rooms for women to use breast pumps to get their milk to their children.
That's
later.
A relatively new thing.
Yes.
And it's not nearly as widespread as it needs to be.
And it's not nearly as satisfying for baby or mom.
No, not at all. In one case, a woman I was talking to who has a customer service job, the bitterness in her voice, I mean, yeah, she was like, you know, I wanted to keep breastfeeding my kid. I wanted to, but I could not. I brought a breast pump to work, and I've tried. I tried so hard, but I have a customer service job, and there was no place to do it, and it just didn't work. And so my baby had to go on formula long before she should have.
Well, right.
And that's a travesty.
It is a travesty. And, in fact, our whole sexualization of the human breast plays into this. That is to say, many, many women are embarrassed or find it very difficult to simply breastfeed their child if they're in a public or semi-public situation. And I've seen now there are these blankets that women throw over themselves while breastfeeding. And that makes the baby have to be in a very warm environment, shall we say, in order to suckle. I think our society has become perverse and kind of weirdly post-industrial. I always think of the book Brave New World, where babies essentially were produced literally in test tubes and never had to have any encounter really with a mother.
And maybe that would just be easier.
Ooh. All right.
Here's something weird.
Yeah.
Okay. A few weeks before my son was born, we received in the mail, absolutely unsolicited, a box from a major infant formula manufacturer with a couple free cans of formula in it and a form letter congratulating us on the pending birth of our kid. Hey, here's some artificial gunk to feed your kid.
Well,
how weird is that?
You know that Nestle for years used to provide a similar service all over Africa, all over the what used to be called the third world. And the idea was to essentially addict babies to the formula and to not have the mothers be raising their children using breast milk. The consequence being the milk supply dries up and these women become dependent on this product, which then makes a lot of money for Nestle.
And moreover, a lot of women can't find that they can't afford enough formula and have to mix it at a weaker concentration.
Right, right.
That's just nightmarish. And on that happy note, let's go back to the phones. Marion, good morning.
Well, good morning, Abe and Joe, and congratulations, Abe.
Thank you.
On not only a wonderful birth of your new son, but a success, a happy, joyous occasion inside of this for-profit industrial hospital complex.
Yeah, it's nice on the inside, let me tell you.
Well, not always, and you were very fortunate.
I say that tongue-in-cheek. Go ahead.
Well, some may think, being on the outside looking in, that it's a cozy place to be, especially if they're going to have a baby. But oftentimes it's not, and they're very, very invasive, and they like to take over your birth. And so you happen to have all the right people, including your gynecologist, your primary care person. But that is so, so much luck you had, or not luck, because you did research and you're educating yourselves, and there's a lot of intention involved. But people believe that doctors and nurses are looking out for their best interest and go into these hospitals to have their babies in this case, we're just talking about the baby, having babies,
mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't want to have, say, surgery at home, but a baby being born is such a natural everyday occurrence. That is something you can do at home and have not have a hot, whereas you can't have surgery at home.
No.
So it's... I just want to emphasize how fortunate you really were.
Oh, I believe
my
me,
daughter's birth was taken over inside the hospital, mm-hmm. and both of my hospital births were taken over. Fortunately, I have two home births that balanced my whole experience out. So I had, for instance, my first home birth, which was my second child, was born at home in Albuquerque. It just so happens. And then the last 2 weeks of this birth, the midwife was so good at teaching us and empowering us not to let anybody take over our birth that, in fact, we let her go at the last minute, or 2 weeks, actually. And with lots of thought, intent, and prayer, we felt like she was taking over our birth. There were reasons why, but without going into that,
mm-hmm.
I was also very close to the hospital, and... had the best of care with a girlfriend who had recently had a birth naturally at a hospital successfully. Mm-hmm. And her elder daughter and my elder daughter entertained each other all night and made welcome home baby pictures. And this birth was the most incredible experience of my life, to have a home birth without any assistance.
Yeah,
I don't advocate that because, in fact, the next time it was necessary... And you want to make sure you have a midwife with you.
Yeah.
You really do.
You
and
need
my
some
last
backup,
child
really.
Had, for instance, was born slightly lavender and needed oxygen immediately. And because he was at home, the midwife simply, you know, reached over to her oxygen tank and pulled out the tube, handed it to me. I mean, I looked into her eyes seeking panic, and there was none.
Oh, and yeah. Yeah, to have someone who's confident and competent on hand, what a great thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my baby's nursing 20 minutes later, and a hospital would have taken that baby away from me.
Well, that used to be...
You know, today, if you go to a hospital, it is the most germ-filled place to take you to go to have a baby. And if you are if you are lucky enough to be strong enough to advocate for yourself, then you will probably... Your chances of having a happy birth are much higher. But if you're not, if you're like my daughter, who immediately they told her, you know, a week before her baby was due, they told her, oh, your baby's so small, we're going to have to go in there and take him out. Hmm. And, you know, then they put, they wouldn't leave her alone. They induced labor, and they were all about to take him out, just go in and cut him out. And fortunately, she had him before they could. But the surgery has gone up a thousandfold now. Doctors don't even need an excuse to have surgery to have cesarean.
Well, let's be clear here that it varies enormously from hospital to hospital and from gynecologist obstetricians. All over. There is a good pattern, a growing pattern, for those who can afford it, of a more natural childbirth, whether or not it's in a hospital or at home. And the nurse midwife phenomenon is growing all the time. It's ordinary folk that face the most difficult problem in the birthing situation. And in fact, the statistics for persons of color in our society show that it tends to be people who's less advantaged who end up having the most often having cesarean sections and so on. But I don't want to create the impression on anyone that going to those medical techniques is a sign of failure or is necessarily a wrong thing. But I do appreciate your experience and sharing it with us. And your points are very good ones. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call. And believe me, I am quite aware of how fortunate I am. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Yeah.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Pear, good morning. Hello. Oh, Harry. Sorry, Harry.
Yeah, Harry, yes. First, congratulations on bringing a new life into this world.
Hey, thank you.
And 20 years ago, when my last daughter was born at Portland Adventist, I took I was allowed to go in and I took pictures. Mm-hmm. Did you take pictures?
Oh, I sure did.
Okay.
Yeah, I had pictures on the internet within minutes.
Oh, okay. I have a picture of when my daughter actually coming out of her mother. Her my daughter doesn't like it, so I always hide it behind other pictures.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, I think a point here is it's really important is that birthing can be a wonderful and positive experience. Sometimes there are issues, and many of those issues are due to poor nutrition or poor exercise or poor all kinds of stuff. And that in our society, the number of interventions in birthing, particularly cesarean sections, is inordinately higher than in other societies, and there's no causal reason. There's no reason for that beyond a whole host of issues that have to do with poor health care delivery.
Yes, and when I after the baby was born, we were sitting down in the hospital to fill out the birth certificate, and I'm African American, and my partner was white, and they. I left out. They wanted to know what my race was. I left it out. Then a nurse came in and says, "I'm sorry, we have to fill out the race part for you." So they put in that I was black and or African American.
Yeah, you know the obsession with race that has characterized the society from its beginnings is really quite bizarre, and it's like it's somehow important.
Yes, I know. So
which makes it important. Anyway, congratulations. I appreciate your experience very much.
One last thing.
Sure.
Did you know that half of all babies born in this world are born in a hut on a dirt floor?
I didn't know that, but I'd be willing to accept it.
Yeah. I would, too.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
Right. Thanks for the call.
He brings up a very good point. Human births is something that's been happening for time out of mind. And what we think of as standard procedure in this country is really a very, very new sort of thing. So let's take care of a little biz and we'll go back to the phones. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio host David Barsamian interviews independent documentary filmmaker Sanjay Kak on India, David versus Goliath. At 10, hear Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a report on the national fast to say not one more Let me try that again.
Yes.
A report on the national fast to say not one more deportation. Okay. Organized by the National Day Labor Organizing Network, an interview with law professor Marjorie Cohn on Edward Snowden and his legal rights to political asylum. And we hear from Wild Idaho Rising Tide on confronting Northwest coal mining, hauling, and burning. At 11 on stage and studio, Portland composer and pianist Daryl Grant talks about his new composition, The Territory, inspired by a variety of events in regional history, and we'll hear a story on Oregon's most diverse town. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews abstract painter Diane Avio-Augie, whose show Synergy is now at the Mark Woolley Gallery. And this headline in this morning, the Supreme Court today effectively struck down the heart of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 by a 5-4 vote, ruling that Congress had not provided adequate justification for subjecting 9 states, mostly in the South, to federal oversight.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Oh,
all this and more
so
coming up today
happy.
On KBOO.
We have a lot of calls. Let's
we
see
do.
We can
Let's
get
go
some.
Back to the phone.
231-8187.
Helen, good morning.
Hi. Well, I heard this on the radio about a doctor who traveled around the world to see how people have their babies. And he went to Japan, and there was an island, and the women who were pregnant sat and repaired the fish nets for their whole pregnancy. And they were so still that when the baby was born, they couldn't really tell very much about the baby because it was such a quiet 9 months. And then the mother would be in the bed for a month with the baby, and they wouldn't get depressed after that. So that's my story.
Well, that's an interesting story. Hmm. Thank you very much, Helen.
Okay.
Take care.
So there's a birthing tradition very, very rooted in cultural
yeah,
needs
very
and
different
necessities.
Story. Very All right, 231-8187.
Ken, good morning.
Good morning, and congratulations.
Hey, thanks.
I don't have a comment. I have a question.
Sure.
And it just occurred to me the other day. I was on the web reading about psychopaths and sociopaths, And the opinion of some people who know a lot more about it than I do, that most of the CEOs and the structure of the corporations, for the most part, resemble psychopathics or psychopathic behavior. So this ties into birthing in this way. Do you think one of the characteristics of a sociopath or a psychopath is that they don't seem to have any empathy?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the newborn learns empathy in the first weeks of its life at its mother's breast?
No, that's a good question.
Of that, yeah. You know, so I wonder if there's any statistics about the rate of this disorder in other societies. Anyway, that's my question.
I don't know, Abe. I don't have any stats at hand.
I don't know. Well, that's a very good question. Thank you very much for the call.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, you're right. The corporate power structure in America essentially rewards sociopathic behavior. For example, if you're able to lay off a whole bunch of employees and it drives up share prices, you are often, as a CEO, lavishly rewarded for that.
Yeah.
And I think you can broadly sketch that out throughout history. Many people who have risen to positions of power and dominance essentially did so via sociopathic and even psychopathic means. So in terms of the raw exercise of power, yes, often sociopaths and psychopaths are rewarded historically. So the question is, then, if you're interested in a healthier, saner, more stable society, what can you do to mitigate the worst effects of that sociopathic behavior? And that's something that other countries in the world seem to have gotten a handle on. Those that offer health care to each and every citizen, regardless of whether they have a job. That's something that we haven't got a handle on here. And those worth sociopathic instincts run rampant, such that people now who have children are at the mercy of their paymasters and are unable to be the most effective parents that they can be.
I think in general, we as a society have moved away from a compassionate approach to life. And that's really what we're talking about.
It really is. An empathetic approach to life.
And let's get, I think we have time for a couple more calls. Let's get another call on 2318-187.
Leslie, what's up? Oh, no. Who's Jennifer? Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to talk about the stay-at-home mom,
sure.
Something I did for 10 years. And it's an occupation that gets no money, and I had no money going to my Social Security. And
right.
It's a very, it's a look down upon profession, and it's the most important job. And why can't we have something in place governmentally that says, if you stay home with your children, here is a carrot. I mean, we will pay into your Social Security. We will.
A good idea. It's an interesting idea. It's a good idea.
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we need to start rewarding those parents who, whatever socioeconomic level, if they want to stay home and parent their children, that they have that choice. The big problem with women and children is choice. There's no choice.
That's
so
true.
It would be great if they had a choice to say, okay, I'm not going to make as much money, but I'm still going to have money going into my 401k. It's going to be part of the health care plan that, I'm going to have Social Security so that if anything happens, I'm going to have something to fall back on. And because it's a very, think about all the moms that have stayed home. And, then for whatever reason, they get divorced and then they've lost everything. And
yeah,
they've done
right.
the most important job. They've done the most important job that anyone can do.
Yeah. Why should they have to sacrifice right. their retirement, for example, because they Absolutely. Chose to stay home and take care of their families?
My retirement is practically nothing because I chose to stay home for 10 years. We were a one income family. My husband didn't make a lot of money. But we had enough to own a small little 800 square foot house, and I was very happy to do that, and it was a sacrifice that I was willing to make. But as a single mom, I could never have done it.
Oh yeah, that's
So why should they get penalized? And more importantly, the children get penalized. The children suffer tremendously.
You're right. Most importantly,
the parent doesn't have a choice. If the parent doesn't have a choice, the children suffer.
We've run out of time. We have to end this conversation.
Yeah, this was a great show. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, and Abe, congratulations,
hey, thanks.
Man.
I'm pretty excited.
All right, we'll see y'all. Stay tuned. Best in programming in the USA.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. Disorder.
Are you a veteran with hearing loss? Saturday, June 29th, Hearing Loss Solutions for Veterans will take place from 8:45 to 5:30 at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. It features workshops, panel discussions, and the newest technology. Lunch will be provided. Don't miss Hearing Loss Solutions for Veterans at 8:45 a.m. Saturday, June 29th at the Oregon Convention Center. Pre-register today at hamiltoncaptel.com/veterans.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, host David Barsamian interviews independent documentary filmmaker Sanjay Kak on India, David versus Goliath. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a report on the National Fast to say not one more deportation, organized by the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. An interview with law professor Marjorie Cohn on Edward Snowden and his legal rights to political asylum. And we hear from Wild Idaho Rising Tide on confronting Northwest coal mining, hauling, and burning. At 11, on stage and studio, Portland composer and pianist Daryl Grant talks about his new composition, The Territory, inspired by a variety of events in regional history. And we'll hear a story on Oregon's most diverse town. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews abstract painter Diane Avio-Agi, whose show Synergy is on now at the Mark Woolley Gallery. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.